Donoricity by Steve Thomas. Introduction. Donoricity? What in the world does donoricity mean? Well, donoricity means fundraising your donors' love. Donoricity means growth for your nonprofit. Donoricity means always having engaging conversation with donors, even when they say they can't give. Donoricity means direct mail fundraising you're proud of. Donoricity means a change in mindset you'll love, and you'll love how your donors respond. Donoricity means donors are glad to hear from you and glad to give to you. Donoricity means that and more. That's what this is all about. If donoricity was in the dictionary, the definition might be something like donoricity, noun, the state of being focused on donors and donor desires, a growth strategy for nonprofits, like electricity or simplicity, donoricity. Yep, I made up the word to help describe what I have to say. The word might be made up, but the strategy is tested and proven. Donoricity isn't the first icity name I've created. I named our ad agency Onicity, but more on that later. First, let me take you to our offices. We have a piece of artwork by Hugh McLeod in our conference room that says, "You can't read the label on the jar you're in." The art is abstract, but the message is clear. You have to see your world through the eyes of others, and you'll probably need some help doing it. This is where Donoricity begins. We help nonprofits grow their revenue, primarily through fundraising. We want the art to remind our clients that it is a mindset shift to think first about donors. When you're inside the jar, your organizational goals may seem clear and primary, but what are your donors' goals? If you don't know, you run the risk of losing them. Donoricity changes how you think about and talk to your donors. Most importantly, it changes how your donors respond. This is a powerful message for nonprofits struggling to connect with donors. Many of these groups are so focused on what they're trying to do that they don't take into account what donors want to do. What I've learned is that if you focus on your donors' goals, your work becomes more effective and rewarding. Fundraising becomes easier. The worst mistake a nonprofit can make is to focus on themselves when fundraising. I know that sounds like crazy talk, but stick with me. It's a natural inclination to think of yourself first. You're committed to your cause, and the problems you're trying to solve are often large, so of course you need the donor's help to fix them. Since you feel strongly about the work you're doing, it should be easy to convey that passion to potential donors, right? How can they not see the need to join in the fight with you? The struggle's real. As a result, nonprofits spend a lot of time selling donors on the value of their organization's work. They focus on the organization's needs, particularly if it's financial needs, and how donors can respond. The problem is that most donors don't care that much about your organization's financial needs. Most donors don't care whether you have enough money to make payroll this month or to publish your annual report or monthly newsletter. What donors care about is accomplishing something significant in the world. They want to fix a problem. They want to change their neighborhood, their city, their country, their world. A few donors will care about your organization's cash flow, but most will only care about changing something in the world that is not working. The trick for nonprofits is to jump out of the jar and see the world through their donors' eyes. Donoricity is a way to tell donors, here's the problem, and here's how you can work with us to solve it. If you do that, donors and prospective donors will lean in and pay attention. The focus is no longer on what the organization is doing. It's about what the donor can accomplish. Most nonprofits generally believe they're donor-focused. Time after time, they make the mistake of not focusing on the donor and what the donor wants to accomplish. Instead, they focus on their own needs and finding help for the organization's mission. They can't see things from the outside, from where the donor is sitting. The situation is analogous to what happened in businesses in the early 1980s. Back then, businesses recognized that if they focused on themselves, they wouldn't grow, they would fail. When they focused on their customers' needs and interests, they succeeded. Think about the retail giant Amazon. Remember when they sold just books and their competition was retailers like Barnes & Noble and Walden Books? By changing paradigms and thinking about what the customer wanted, Mr. Bezos not only changed the book and publishing industry, he revolutionized retail generally. His competitors aren't Barnes & Nobles anymore. They're Target and Walmart and just about anybody who sells something to the consumer. How'd he do it? One easy answer is that he focused on what the consumer wanted and needed. Obviously, it's complex, but learning what to think like Amazon is a smart strategy. Independent bookstores who've survived the Amazon tsunami are another facet to consider. They pay attention to their consumers in a different way than Amazon. They don't have Amazon's big servers dishing data-driven recommendations. Local bookstores can build in-person relationships with their customers. Eagle Harbor Books is a small independent bookstore in my neighborhood. It's my wife's favorite place to buy books. It's not unusual for us to run into Drew, who sells her books, while we are standing in line at the deli getting coffee. They go back and forth with author recommendations and, if you like that book, you'll love this book kinds of conversations. This bookstore and its people focus on its customers' needs and desires. It's our bookstore as a result. In many ways, Donoricity is about making this kind of thing happen for your nonprofit. Successful organizations are focusing on their donors' interests. Other nonprofits are focusing on the organization's needs and trying to persuade donors to write a check and stand aside so the organization can do the work. Who do you think has more engaged and enthusiastic supporters? The most effective and sustainable approach to fundraising is to focus on what you already know the donor wants to do. If your organization's goals and your donor's goals align, you have a powerful match. You don't have to convince donors of anything. All you have to do is connect with them. It's easier for donors to give when they're already in love with the work you do and you can show them what their contributions will achieve. Donor focus is particularly important today because of the competitive landscape. Most nonprofits are so focused on themselves that they forget that there are tens of thousands of other organizations also trying to raise money. Donors are inundated with information about products and causes. Consequently, many groups have a hard time keeping donors focused on their organizations and its needs. They can't be heard over the deafening chorus of, "Me too, me too." So how do you make your voice heard above the din? By crafting a message that resonates with donors who share your goals and who want to be a part of what you're doing. That's why it's important to be clear about who you are as an organization and what you're trying to accomplish. Only then will you start to see hands going up and hear people saying, "Well, that's interesting. I want to be a part of that." Be clear about what you believe. I don't mean that in a religious or political sense. If you're feeding hungry children, you might say, "We believe every child needs, deserves, and has a right to 3 healthy meals a day." Donoricity will help you find people who embrace these same principles. You can connect with them and you don't have to convince them of anything because your beliefs are already aligned. Donoricity is a marvelous way to make sure your voice is heard. Other nonprofits will be saying the same thing. "Look at us, look at us, look at us. We do this and we do that. We need your money to fix this big monumental problem." When you sound like everybody else, no one will hear you. But if you change the conversation to be about what the donor wants to accomplish, you will stand out. At some point, almost every nonprofit has a board member or donor who says, "You send out too many emails. You send out too many fundraising letters." But when you're doing donor-focused communication, you rarely hear that complaint. Well, at least from donors. If donors like what you're doing and they feel a part of your mission, they want to hear about it. They want to be part of the victory. They want to know about it. This kind of communication helps you stand out and connect with donors. You're not just saying, me too," or using colorful logos or glossy newsletters with big photos to distinguish yourselves. Those tricks don't matter. What matters to donors is that they connect with what you're doing in the world. You want to send the message that this is a collaboration, not a solicitation. My wife, Chris Hoots, and I live on Bainbridge Island, across Puget Sound from Seattle. Chris is my partner in all things. We're often referred to as Hoots and Thomas, both professionally and personally. She's a genius with data, analysis, strategy, and fundraising. Those of us who know her well get to call her Hoots. Together, we own and operate two boutique advertising agencies. Our first agency, Onecity, helps Christian ministries with fundraising and marketing. Our other business, Hoots & Thomas, serves nonprofits and a few small, select small businesses. We deliver income solutions that help these organizations connect with donors and achieve their fundraising goals. We do everything from single major donor portfolios to completely integrated multi-platform annual development campaigns. We don't just pull these things off the shelf. Everything is custom built for our clients using the strategies and principles of Donoricity. We work with both faith-based and secular groups, and everything in this book applies to both kinds of organizations. I want to call your attention that Christian donors have distinct values and motivations. We'll talk more about that as it comes up throughout this book. If there is a direct path that prepares you to succeed in this business, I didn't take it. The trail I took was circuitous. In college in Texas, I fell in love with marketing and advertising and dreamed of being a J. Walter Thompson type guy. My first job after college was working in advertising and marketing department of a large utility company in Texas. It was a wonderful experience. I learned everything from television production to radio and print, but over time, I just found the work empty. I left to start a business and eventually had the opportunity to pastor and lead a couple of churches. I loved it, and that experience led me to a consulting job, which helped a nonprofit with advertising, marketing, and public relations. After 6 months, the nonprofit brought me on staff, and I was director of operations for 5 years or so. This is when my fundraising education began in earnest. I was in charge of marketing and fundraising, among other duties. Eventually, I served as the CEO for about 5.5 years. I hired ad agencies and consultants over that decade or so, and I learned an awful lot from them. I learned a lot about what I didn't want to do. For example, I had one consultant who would show up once a month and give me a list of all the things I needed to get done over the next 4 weeks. Then he would leave. He was a good guy, and he helped me, but when he returned after a month, he'd ask, "How'd you do on your list?" And then he'd start adding new things to my to-do list. Finally, I got frustrated. "So you're getting ready to leave and you're just adding to my to-do list and I have no one who can do all these things," I said to him. "Which of these things are you going to do?" "I don't actually do the work," he said. I help you figure out how to do it." "Well, in that case," I said, "don't come back until I have everything done." I fired him because I couldn't do all the things he wanted me to do. The point is that I know people running nonprofits live their lives with too much to do. When Hoots and I started Onecity, we agreed that we would not just give our clients jobs and then walk away. We decided to practice strategic doing. We would roll up our sleeves and help our clients do the most strategic thing they needed. We're not the consultants who leave you with a list of jobs you don't have time to finish. Part of our work is teaching clients how to use a donor focus to improve their fundraising. Focusing on donors makes a nonprofit more efficient, and in our experience, the results are much, much better. Anytime an organization raises more money, everything gets better. Early in my career, I was the CEO of this nonprofit. That meant a big part of my job was making pitches to groups and major donors. I was horrible at it at first. I focused only on my organization's needs and my needs as the leader of it. At least I was smart enough to know I wasn't good at it. So I tried different approaches and read all sorts of books about how I could approach people. When something didn't work, I'd try something different. No matter what I was reading or learning, I'd always end up saying things like, "Here's what we want to do. Here's what we are going to build. Here's what we're going to make. Here's what we're going to produce." People would hear this and begin to wonder how much it was going to cost them to get me out of the room. I felt like a really awful sales guy. Nothing wrong with sales, but my job should have been about to build relationships, not negotiate transactions. Early on in my career, I had an appointment with a businessman who I had learned was a person of significant wealth. That really was the main thing I knew about him. He was wealthy, and he had a loose connection to my organization's work. He was an older Southern gentleman. He listened politely as I made my pitch. He had his arms crossed, and all I could think about was I needed him to give us a decent gift because that would really help our budget. I didn't say that, of course, but I know that's what was coming across. And as it did, I could feel the flop sweat starting to beat up on my forehead. It was clear that I was interested in his money more than anything else. He was gracious, but then I got to the price tag. It's always tricky to bring up money on the first visit, but at least he was expecting it. When I was through, he smiled, and in that lovely southern accent, he said, "Son, that's just not something I'm interested in." It was such a crisp, clear no. This guy had plenty of money. I bet he could have reached in his petty cash drawer and pulled out enough money to fund my entire project. But he wasn't interested in what I wanted to do. And I wasn't interested in what he wanted to do. I was focused on me. I even made the mistake of bringing in what I thought was some slick brochures to help convince him. He was this multimillionaire accustomed to making multi-million dollar deals, and I thought these materials would impress him. They didn't. I suspect that stuff had stopped impressing him many years ago. I see fundraisers today making their version of these same mistakes, not just in face-to-face meetings, but in public presentations. They get a group of people in a banquet hall and start clicking through their PowerPoint, and people want to get out of there fast. These nonprofit CEOs are talking about what they want to do. They're not talking about the people in the audience and what those individuals want to do. Over time, I've realized that I have a much better chance of engaging my audience if I'm talking about a problem they consider to be a problem. Donors need a connection to what's in their heart. They want an opportunity to work on a problem they consider important. This is never going to be about color photos or PowerPoint presentations or logos or any of that stuff. That stuff can be helpful, but that shouldn't be the main thing. As I said, this gentleman was gracious. He didn't give me a dime. He introduced me to some of his friends and helped me get a few more at-bats. I gradually learned to talk less about my organization's needs and more about the problem my organization was solving. I wasn't so quick to say, "Here's what you ought to do." Instead, I would talk about the problem and the opportunity we saw to solve that problem. That's when people started leaning in. That's when I realized that when I talk to someone about something they are interested in, they want to have that conversation. They want to know more. So here's what you're going to get out of this book. This book will help you understand the theory, strategy, and benefits of donoricity. You'll understand why it's important and why it works. I'll show you how to communicate with donors in a donor-focused way. I'll show you how to take a broad strategic view and not get bogged down in minor details like the color of the envelope that works best in direct mail. I've actually had clients ask me about that. That is really the wrong question. The right question to ask are, how do I write a letter to someone that focuses on their goals and not my organization's? How do I get a donor to decide that, yes, this problem is something they want to work on with me? How do I get them to say they'll join in changing this part of the world I'm working on? Once you've answered these questions, then you can talk about the color of the envelope if you really want to. If you don't focus on the donor, your mailing list is going to be another letter in the mailbox or an email in the inbox or a commercial on TV along with everybody else shouting, "Me too, me too." You just won't stand out. The other thing you'll get out of this book are some actionable suggestions and recommendations. Writing what I know and believe about donoricity was a huge challenge. I'm used to talking with and thinking with clients who I know well, or I get to engage with people in seminars who I get to know on the spot, or I have digital conversations on the blog. But a book is a painfully challenging, but it's a good conversation to have. I don't know you yet. It's also a huge wrestling match to decide what to include and what to leave out. So you can go to donoricity.com and find resources and the items I decided not to include in the book, but that you might still find interesting. One of the great things about being donor-focused is that you won't have to change what's already in your heart. Everyone I know in the nonprofit sector is committed to the problem they're trying to change. Whether it's an environmental cause, helping children or helping animals, we're all crusaders. We're all trying to make a difference in the world. Becoming donor-focused doesn't require you to change that. You remain true to your heart. Many nonprofits get caught up in other concerns, forget to talk to their donors. A consultant will talk about what their brand should be or what their color palette should be. She will tell them to mail X number of direct mail pieces or only send emails on Tuesday mornings at 7 o'clock. It's easy to get focused on that stuff and forget the goal is still to talk with the donor. Imagine you just have one donor who writes one check a year that pays for everything. What an interesting situation that would be. You would be concerned about how that donor was feeling and thinking about you. You would treat that donor respectfully, and you'd be focused on that donor's goals. Plus, you'd always spell their name right. If you think of all the donors in your donor database that way, your focus shifts. The relationship becomes much different, much more meaningful. You don't worry so much about what the other organizations are doing or whether your logo stands out. You're interested in what that one donor wants to achieve and whether you're helping that donor solve that problem. When you look at your donors this way, your donor-focused messaging becomes distinct and sharp and different from what everybody else is doing.